May it please the court, I'm Anthony Noble, registration number 33910, and I represent the appellant, Gerald Chavez. The issue in this case is whether Mr. Chavez was competent during his trial. The record is full of evidence that suggests that he wasn't competent. He wasn't competent to proceed without counsel. Right from the beginning, there were suggestions in the record that he may have been suffering from a mental illness. During the early stages, the preliminary hearings, pretrial hearings, he fired his public defender, and the court gave him an Arguello advisement. He explained that he didn't have any chemistry with his public defender, and that was his reason for deciding to go pro se. The court did give him a very thorough Arguello advisement, and I don't think that we can fault the court for anything that was done during that hearing. He had a second hearing at which the court was talking about his decision to proceed pro se, and the court wanted to know whether he wanted to go to trial with advisory counsel. Again, there were some slightly unusual comments that were made, and the court allowed him to proceed pro se. Then, at a pretrial conference the day before trial, the court had some lingering concerns about Mr. Chavez's decision to proceed pro se and gave him a second Arguello advisement. Mr. Chavez was talking about how he didn't have any chemistry with the advisory counsel that was offered to him. He referred to the fact that he didn't want to go to trial with the devil sitting beside him. And he talked about how he wanted to be at trial with God, Jehovah, and Zeus at his side. But the court allowed him to go.
Pardon me, Mr. Noble. Is there any evidence in the record that Mr. Chavez did not understand that he was going to trial on the charges that he was facing?
No, Your Honor. In fact, I believe that Mr. Chavez did have a very thorough understanding of the charges.
And during the trial, is there any indication that during the trial he didn't understand that he was representing himself?
No, Your Honor. I believe that he perfectly understood that. He had a very detailed and thorough understanding of these facts, of the charges, of his representation, his right to trial.
And then, if I may ask one more question before the last question, is there any indication in the record that he, in the course of the trial, didn't understand that he was raising a defense? I understand that you think that the defense was fantastic or bizarre, but nonetheless, he understood that he was putting forth a defense, correct?
I think the record does indicate that, Your Honor.
So here's my last question. If we're talking about competency to stand trial, don't your answers to all those questions basically satisfy the fact that he was competent to stand trial? And that shouldn't that basically carry over into the issue whether he was competent to represent himself?
Well, Your Honor, that does demonstrate that he has a factual understanding of the trial, his role at trial, and the charges against him. But what he didn't have was a rational understanding. And both the statute, the competency statute, and the due process clause require that the defendant have both a factual understanding and a rational understanding of the proceedings.
Well, I understand that you think his defense, again, was bizarre, but nonetheless, he put one forth. And to be candid with you, okay, it was unsuccessful, but many defenses are unsuccessful, and many defenses could, to an outside person, seem to be bizarre. But nonetheless, we don't question the competency either of the lawyers who raise them necessarily or of the defendants who claim them. So I guess my question for you is, what is so extraordinary about the record in this case to suggest to us that this man wasn't competent as far as the law of competency is concerned? Not mental health, not guilty for mental health reasons, but competency.
The fact that it was so irrational, You're right that many defenses are, do seem kind of illogical or strange or unusual, but this one was, extreme. But it was very extreme. It was extremely damaging to him. It had no basis in reality, and it had. There was no way that he could be successful with this defense.
Mr. Noble, but, the trial court was there, and the trial court made firsthand observations, and it took everything in context, and although he had some moments of, strange outbursts, as a whole, the trial court felt that he was actually doing a pretty good job of representing himself, and so why shouldn't we defer to the trial court's observations?
Well, Your Honor, there does have to be a certain amount of deference to the trial court's observations, the fact that the trial court experienced that firsthand. But I don't think you can ignore the fact that this record is just full of incidences which do suggest that he was incompetent. The language that he used in court was totally inappropriate. There's no way that he could connect to the jury with that language. His theory of defense was, very bizarre. His cross-examination of the victim, of the witnesses, his own testimony, his closing arguments. These were all incidents that should have caused a reasonable judge to have some doubt about his competency to proceed.
So, Mr. Noble, I mean, this—you've just touched on the issue, and that is the responsibility or the duty of the trial court to sua sponte raise competency, and under a plein air standard. Now, what is it in the record that you contend is bona fide proof of incompetence?
Well, first, Your Honor, I would disagree that the court conducts a plein air review of.
Well, you want us to adopt a federal standard, and if we're disinclined to adopt a federal standard because we're not required to follow federal cases, and instead continue to adopt the standard that we adopt here in Colorado, which is a plein air standard, what is it that is bona fide proof?
Well, first, Your Honor, I don't think we have any precedent on what the standard of review is when a defendant represents himself pro se. The cases that are referred to by the Attorney General are cases in which the defendant was represented by counsel. So counsel was there to either make an objection or to request a competency evaluation. In this case, we've got a pro se defendant who, could have been incompetent. So to give a plain error review under these circumstances would seem unfair, because that would require a pro se defendant who could be incompetent to be competent enough to make a record of the error that's being made. By its very nature, incompetency could include a lack of insight, and I think that this is what the record demonstrates with Mr. Chavez, that he had a total lack of insight of the defense that he was pursuing and his own mental state.
Mr. Noble, I want to make sure we don't confuse something like lack of understanding of what will work and what won't with competency. A lack of insight into the efficacy of a defense, I respectfully suggest to you, is not a competency issue. That's simply someone who may not be familiar with the proceedings. And of course, that's one of the perils of proceeding pro se. And you yourself have said that there were two detailed Arguello advisements. So, I'd suggest to you, hasn't your client sort of, aren't we past that now? He had his opportunity to have a lawyer. He said, no, I want my own. And so the fact that he lacked insight to the efficacy of his defense, I suggest to you, that's not a competency issue, is it?
But Your Honor, the lack of insight was what led to the irrational decisions and the irrational understanding of the proceedings and of the defense that he was pursuing. So I think that is a competency issue. He demonstrated that he really had no insight to the charges, to the defense, to his own mental state. He had no ability to present an argument that would connect with the jury. And it wasn't like a bad strategic decision. I think that the record here really demonstrates that the decisions that he did make were a result of either some kind of mental illness or incompetency.
How do you Mr. Noble, how should we draw a line between thuggish behavior, rude and crass behavior, and a behavior that is mentally sick, incompetent? How in the world could the trial judge draw that distinction?
Well, Your Honor, I think the record in this case demonstrates that Mr. Chavez was in no way out to disrupt the proceedings or cause any kind of scene. He was respectful most of the time to the court. It's more of a case that he just didn't understand that what he was saying and doing, you know, was offensive or, you know, was obscene. So I don't think this is I don't think the record really indicates that this is, you know, thuggish, a thuggish attitude towards the court. It's more of a bad decisions made on the basis of incompetency or mental illness.
Well, uncouth seems a little light to describe his behavior.
It's very, very disturbing. I mean, the whole trial was very disturbing. Anyone with any experience of mental illness that reads this transcript would be disturbed by what they see.
But again, the problem is, Mr. Noble, we've got a cold transcript in front of us. The trial court was there, and the trial judge, you know, competency is one of those issues that the trial courts know they can raise on their own motion. That's the statute tells them that. So, you know, if the trial court, you know, if there were things that were happening that made the trial court think, this man is not competent as we define competency in Colorado. The court knew that it didn't need a motion from anybody else. It knew it could raise it on its own.
But Your Honor, also, the decision not to do that is also subject to review, and that's what this court's job is to look at the whole transcript and determine whether there's anything in that transcript which would have caused that judge to have some reason to doubt Mr. Chavez's competency.
And you have told us that Mr. Chavez was, for the most part, polite and respectful for the court, but seemed to get agitated when he talked about the alleged sexual dalliance between two people. That's what seemed to tick him off. But if the guy is respectful most of the time and seems jealous at one point and overreacts to that, why is that competency? That seems to me, once again, we're talking about in the realm of normal human behavior, which is a very broad spectrum.
Well, Your Honor, this wasn't just one outburst or just a few outbursts. This was his whole theory of defense. This was his whole strategy. It wasn't something that just occurred because he was jealous or in a rage. You know, he had planned this, he'd researched it, and he'd presented it. And it was every day of the trial he was presenting this theory through cross-examination, through his own testimony, and through his opening and closing arguments.
Well, as the phrase goes, victory has many fathers, defeat's an orphan. If he'd been successful here, if the jury had bought this, we'd be looking at him as a brilliant pro se lawyer. He just picked the wrong horse, didn't he?
I don't think he made that conscious decision, Your Honor. I think that these decisions that he made at trial were based on incompetency. What I would ask the court to do is remand this case for a retrospective competency hearing to determine whether or not he was competent at trial, and if not, to vacate the conviction. Unless the court has any further questions, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time. Thank you.
May it please the court, I'm Christine Brady, registration number 24779, representing the people.
Brady, what do you have to say about no precedent for plein air standards where pro se defendants are involved?
I think the defense here is mixing up preservation with legal standard that you follow for looking at the merits of the claim. The federal cases that he cites, none of those cases really deal with preservation. What they say is that if there are no findings by the trial court, then we don't apply the clearly erroneous standard because there's nothing to apply them to. But you will find federal cases that do apply the plain error standard for mental competency. when the issue is not raised. And I apologize, I didn't cite those in my brief because I really didn't understand what the defendant was arguing until today. So the plain error standard does apply. Now, when you go to the merits, you do look at the entire record, and I think that's what the defense was trying to say in the briefs, that you do the comprehensive review that they talk about in federal court, and I think that's right. You look at the whole record to see if a reasonable judge should have found bona fide doubt to trigger the statute. Here, the trial court found that there was no bona fide doubt when the only thing that was said was by a witness, which was the defendant's brother, who is also a convict spending a very long time in prison, doesn't trust the court. There was actually an outburst. He had to be removed from the court. And when he came back, he said, "This is ridiculous. You can't allow my brother to go pro se. Maybe you should question his competence." That was basically the essence of what he said. And the trial court showed that he knew exactly what his, the trial judge knew exactly what his duties were. He said, "Yeah, well, from time to time, a trial court can recognize that a defendant is mentally incompetent, even if nobody raises it. But I don't see that here. Nothing so far has shown me that the defendant is incompetent to proceed." There's also a bit of a mix-up between pro se mistakes at trial and mental competence. Just because you make pro se mistakes, for instance, he alerted the jury to his gang affiliation, his drug use, his violence. I mean, that's not evidence of mental incompetence. It's probably evidence that he should not have gone pro se, and we already know that. These charges were serious, and he should have had an attorney. But he didn't trust attorneys. He's a habitual criminal. He wanted to present his side of the story. That's what he said, and these attorneys weren't going to let him do that. And that's why the attorneys are the devil. Any questions about that part before I move on?
Why shouldn't we be troubled by his bizarre behavior?
Well, first of all, there's no bizarre behavior. It was remarks. And because he admitted that he was in a gang, it is the gang culture to use obscene language. Listen to a rap song, there's obscene language, just like the language he used in presenting his defense. There's no bizarre behavior. There was no outbursts by him.
No, as I understand it, from the record and from Mr. Noble's presentation today, he made a calculated, polite presentation to the courtroom.
That's correct, Your Honor. And that's why I said in my brief, I agree that you with a thorough reading of the record, that's how you determine this case. That's when you're looking at the merits. But it is still under the umbrella of the plain error standard. There's also, in the briefs, the defense cites a case, Indiana versus Edwards, for the proposition that there's a higher level of competence, mental competence, required when a defendant goes pro se. And that's not true, and that's not what that case says. That case says we leave it up to the states. It's a federal case, and it says we leave that up to the states. And in Colorado, the Woods case says we're going to go with the same standard. The same standard to waive counsel is the same standard for judging mental competence.
And there's no argument here that he's challenging his decision to waive counsel or to waive advisor counsel, right?
No, that the sole issue is his mental competence in conducting his trial, not in waiving counsel. And I think that's all I have, unless the court has further questions on any topic. Thank you.
I only have one comment to make, and that's on the lack of any record of any bizarre behavior. Mr. Chavez didn't have an attorney, so he didn't have anybody to make a record of what was happening in court. I'm sure that if there was any extreme or very bizarre behavior, the judge may have made a record or the prosecutor may have made a record. But in this case, there was no record of what his behavior in court actually was. So this is different from many cases in which someone in the court has made a record and that's been put into the transcripts so you can see exactly what the behavior is. But there's no record of that in this case. So we don't know exactly how he behaved in the trial court.
Well, there's certainly, excuse me for interrupting, but there's certainly no admonishment by the trial court from the bench to straighten up or you're going to be expelled from the courtroom or similar instructions from the trial court. Indeed, the record here would indicate that the trial court had no problem with the presentation of Mr. Chavez's case.
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct. And maybe he didn't do something that would lead to any kind of admonishment, but there could have been some kind of behavior which would have led to some kind of concern. For instance, the jurors were concerned about him representing himself. So there could have been, you know, facial expressions, a tick or drooling or something that didn't make it onto.
Oh, we're speculating here, aren't we?
Yes, Your Honor, we are.
Okay.
But I think we're also speculating to say that there was no bizarre behavior, unless the court has any further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Noble. Thank you, Ms. Brady. Thanks to both counsel for your excellent presentations. They were helpful. The matter is deemed submitted, and you can expect a written opinion to issue in due course.